This is the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast with Andy Benoit and your host, John Engel.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the MMQB Podcast with Andy Benoit. I'm John Engel here with Andy at Andy underscore Benoit. You can follow me at Engels Angle. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You'll get it every morning. It's available. And we're on Stitcher now, Andy. You probably don't know what Stitcher is, but for our Android users without iTunes, you can subscribe on Stitcher too. We'll be joined in a little bit by Andrew Brandt of Sports Illustrated and MMQB. We'll shake out all of this free agency and franchise tagging and all of that kind of number business that Andy and I should not be even tiptoeing
in. And then Brandt's great at that.
He's the best. And then we'll have Jim Wyatt from the Tennessean to break down the Titans' needs as we move into a breakdown of the offseason needs of the AFC South.
Andy, come on. Are we going to go here?
It's good to see you again back from the combine. How was it?
That was great. It's great every single year. It's, you know, I don't watch the players there. I mean, it's on TV anyway. The media is not allowed into the combine to see the stuff. I guess it's job interviews or whatever.
Sure.
And I don't care how the drills go. I run around from hotel to hotel meeting with coaches the entire week. And it's great. But you know what I did on Sunday night at the combine when a lot of people were out of town and just the media had scattered and I was exhausted. I had nothing to do for 2.5 hours and I went and saw American Sniper. I've never gone to a movie while I'm on the road, especially not on a business trip, but I had nothing to do and I was staying right next to the theater downtown. So I walked in and saw Sniper. In fact, there was no one there taking tickets. I didn't even do a ticket. I just walked in and saw it.
What?
And they had recliner chairs in there.
You stole a movie?
I guess. And they had recliner chairs in the theater.
It's like Joseph Randall of MMQB.
Yeah, it was a little. Yeah, it was a little bit. But yeah, I know you're a movie buff, is why I said it.
Well, we've gone back and forth on some of these Oscar movies, and I guess you've seen a bulk of them. Have you seen most of them?
I've seen all except Grand Budapest and Selma.
Okay, Grand Budapest was great.
You know what? I don't care what you have to say about it because I know your opinion.
That's just rude.
No, well, I know your opinion on Boyhood, and it's totally discredited everything you have to say about it.
Did you see Whiplash?
Yeah.
Whiplash was twice the movie Boyhood was.
Bull crap. No.
Are you kidding me?
Honest to goodness, John,
I got so sick of that kid by year 14.
That's not what the movie's about.
It doesn't
though.
Matter.
If you don't,
it's part of that. It's part of the acting.
It's
a component.
It's not an acting thing. If you don't appreciate the movie Boyhood, it
that
shows,
it took a decade to make.
That's quite the impressive part about it. If a lack of appreciation for Boyhood is an illustration of a lack of emotional intelligence.
Okay, I think
I've been thinking about this all week.
Okay, I would say you lack emotional intelligence for not accepting other opinions. I don't think everyone liked
your
Boyhood.
Your opinion stinks.
And I think the Academy agrees with me. Because why didn't it win more?
White males over 65 then agree
there
with
we
you,
go.
Which is what I get classified
so
as.
So Andy is the right, be-all, end-all opinion on movies.
It was a genius movie, and it captured the nuances of a generation. Better than any movie ever had.
Why? Because it had a Blink-182 song in the middle, and it made
it part
of your childhood?
Agency. You don't get it. Let's do football.
Should we get into football?
We'd better because we're like half of our audience is.
I think we're still friends though. Past this, can we agree on that?
I mean, we'll talk off air.
Okay. What? Now I have to believe that our friendship is in flux. That's
let's
great.
Just see how the next you
all right,
know,
so
hour here
before
goes.
We get into this AFC South needs breakdown, let's get into some news from around the league, like we always do, and let's start off with an interesting, probably the most interesting component of all these franchise tagging transactions is New England franchise tagging its kicker, Steven Gostkowski, instead.
Right. Do we talk kickers on this
instead
show?
Instead of a highly prized safety. What do you think about
right,
that?
Right. That's what makes it interesting, is that it's Gostkowski.
Gostkowski.
Yeah, that, I'm sure he's dealt with that his whole life, everyone around him. But Devin McCourty is not franchise tagged. And that's the real story to me. And what does that mean? I mean, some have said that there'll be a little bit of a hometown discount. McCourty will be back in New England. If that's the case, then what does that mean for Revis? And I don't see them allowing McCourty to get away. I don't think you can lose either of those two guys. I think Brandon Browner, who I believe is a free agent, you can not find another one because there aren't a lot that are that big, but you can theoretically replace Brandon Browner. You can't replace Revis. And I think McCourty's gotten to where in their scheme you can't replace him because they play a lot of single high safety concepts. He's got the range, kind of like an Earl Thomas, to cover more field. And if you're the only safety, if you're the single high safety, then you've got more range to cover, more field to cover, because you don't have another safety next to you. McCourty's that guy. Plus, as we've talked about before, his cornerbacking background allows him to drop down and cover tight ends man-to-man, and that gives them tremendous versatility in their man-to-man coverages, which is what their whole defense centers around.
So then what would you say to someone that looks at Brandon Browner and Darrelle Revis, say the Patriots are able to retain both of them for the next few years, that
– Brandon Browner and Revis or McCourty and Revis?
No, Brandon Browner and Revis. This is my question. Is that
okay? I'm sorry. I know where you're going.
Is McCourty's value overblown when you have two guys like that? Is it much easier to replace a McCourty?
There are people who would say yes, because some people view the safety position as nothing more, the deep safety especially, as nothing more than an insurance policy, because the safety is so far removed from the ball. He's so far back there that he really can't. This is the theory. He can't influence the game dramatically. He's only going to be near the ball, which is the object of the game, 8 to 10 times in a contest. There are people that believe that. Now, I'm of the school that believes the safety is everything for the scheme, because he's your last line of defense, and how comfortable you feel with that guy determines how aggressive you can be elsewhere. And I think if you were to take Earl Thomas out of Seattle, even with those physical corners, and Brandon Browner was once one of them, even with those corners, that defense would have a setback. Now, it might still be a very good, even a great defense, but it in and of itself would not be a perennial Super Bowl defense like it's come to be.
So you would be comfortable giving a McCourty franchise tag kind of money?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Because he's got to get paid. I mean, if you don't pay McCourty, it just means you don't believe strongly in the safety position. Because if you're not going to pay him, then I mean, he's a second or third best safety in the league at this point. So I would be comfortable with that. And I think New England would too, because we've seen them draft safeties high before. Tavon Wilson, Daron Harmon, second rounders, both. And we've seen them move McCourty, their first round cornerback, very early in his career to free safety. That could be a move a little bit about McCourty, but I think that's also a lot about how they feel about the position.
McCourty did not get tagged, will become a free agent. The Cowboys did franchise tag Dez Bryant in what seems to be a hope to later sign a long-term deal here, right?
Maybe, or it could just be they're being cautious.
Some wariness, yeah.
Yeah, I would think it's because they're trying to figure out the money with the guy. I think that – I don't know off the field. I guess I can't speak to that because I don't know all that's gone on off the field, and they would. They're in Dallas. But Jerry Jones has not had a problem with off-the-field stuff before. Now, the league's increased emphasis on player behavior maybe has changed Jones's mindset about that. But I think – my guess is this is a matter of finances rather than personal relationships.
So Dez Bryant now probably a little frustrated, seeing as he could go get more money than this around $13 million range that you get with the tag.
Well, that's – I mean,
what risk –
guys believe that, but
– I know, but what risk do you run maybe getting a disgruntled player now that has this tag on him when he's like, well, I'm worth more than this?
If he's disgruntled and that impacts him negatively, then that's exactly why you used a franchise tag. Because a guy that can get disgruntled, he's not going to be – that's the Albert Haynesworth scenario when Tennessee tagged Haynesworth back-to-back years because they knew Haynesworth was a jackass. They knew he was going to mail it in as soon as he got paid. And they wanted to confirm that, and it took him 2 years to confirm that, and then he went to Washington and became the biggest joke of all time. You want to hedge against that sort of a thing. So in some respects, if there are concerns about Dez Bryant's, you know, maturity in this regard or his happiness with the team, this is a great test to tell you whether you can trust him long term. How does he respond to this?
Kind of the opposite scenario with Demaryius Thomas with the Broncos is no concerns whatsoever with him off the field.
I think they just need to figure out how to get the money put together on that one.
That's going to become a long term deal, you think, too?
I would imagine. Although here's an interesting. I just thought of this. So I mean, there might be holes.
Fresh
in this.
Hot takes.
This is fresh
right
hot
out the
takes.
Oven.
What if they are concerned? They're not sure what Manning will be after this season, whether they'll have Manning in 2016 or not. They probably won't, but maybe not. I mean, we don't know if it's Manning's last year. So there's that Manning question out there. Maybe Demaryius Thomas is linked to that theoretically, because if you take Manny out of the equation, then what does Thomas's value become? It could be a different offense. They could be built differently. They could decide we're going to invest in other positions. I don't know, but they're likely going to lose Julius Thomas this year, that's bad. And I've heard from people that would know that Manning believes Julius Thomas is more important than Demaryius Thomas.
Do you believe that? Because we've talked back and forth about Demaryius Thomas being one of the top three maybe yards after catch guy in the NFL, but maybe one.
I think what Manning would like about Julius, Manning loves to get a pre-snap understanding of the defense. And Julius Thomas gives him that more than Demaryius Thomas does, because where you align Julius Thomas impacts how the defense lines up. For example, like that play we saw in the Super Bowl, the Gronkowski touchdown, where he walks outside and the wide receiver, essentially, and KJ Wright follows him. That tells you it's man-to-man coverage, and the linebacker has the tight end, because otherwise the cornerback would still be out there. So that's just one example. With Julius Thomas, you get more tips and indicators. Maybe that's what Manning likes about it.
That's interesting.
It is interesting because
he evokes the movement. Is that not uniform for all tight ends?
Well, no, it is uniform for all tight ends. Not all tight ends are as good as Demaryius Thomas split out there. So it's not just
Julius Thomas.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, darn it. I went all year without doing that. I really did.
Yeah,
I really
did. You were good.
It's like the Jordan camera thing. I'm off to such a bad start with names this year. We got Devin McCourty, though. We didn't call him Jason.
No, yeah.
We even talking right. Titans today, so.
There's going to be McCourtys all around, yeah.
I'm surprised that Manning likes Julius more, that I've heard that. He has not said that on the record, but I get why. I don't know which one I take in that discussion, because they're both top three or four at their position. You could almost argue that it's just a matter of what do you believe is more important, tight end or wide receiver. And almost everybody at this point, based on these franchise tag numbers especially, they believe it's wide receiver. But it sounds like Peyton Manning might believe it's tight end, at least in this case. I don't know. I'm sure Manning would not have taken Dallas Clark over Marvin Harrison, though. So maybe I'm taking that too far.
A couple of pass rushers also tagged this week in Justin Houston with the Chiefs and Jason Pierre-Paul in New York. Justin Houston apparently not too pleased about it, though, threatening to hold out till week 10.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't buy it. I don't. It's, what is this, March? So I don't
care. We got
some
time.
He's got time to change his mind or let it settle in.
July 15th, right?
Yeah, or figure out a deal. Yeah, I don't get into that. Not at this stage of the game. And as far as Jason Pierre-Paul goes, I think that makes sense for the Giants to do that. And if I'm Pierre-Paul, you know what I was about to say earlier, John, is players used to hate the franchise tag because it took away all of their leverage. They couldn't get a long-term deal. They're stuck in a one-year deal. What if I get injured? I'm out of the long-term deal, and thus the bigger signing bonus that I would have had. That was the thinking behind it, and that's why guys didn't like it. But anymore, the franchise tags, you can't get it back-to-back years unless you're going to get a significant pay jump because of the, if you tag them twice, it's 120%. So the franchise tag doesn't have quite as much sting as it used to have. Now, there's still the concern about injuries, and like Brian Arakpo is a great example. We'll see how much money he gets after he got tagged last year and then got injured. And he had a down, he had on paper a down year because he didn't have any sacks. I thought he looked fine on film, but he didn't have the sacks, and so he took a step back. That's why guys hate it. But I'm wondering about Jason Pierre-Paul. You know, I'm seeing his age. He can't be more than mid-20s. He's 26. God, he's only 26.
He's on his rookie deal wrapping up.
Yeah, so he's 26 years old. He'll be 27 next year, still in his prime.
Some injury concerns.
Right, and that's why he's probably gotten the tag. But he has a chance here to get $13 million almost, because if he's still in his prime next year and he gets his long-term deal, he would not get $13 million at the end of that deal when he's in his 30s. You see what I'm saying? It's just he's deferring one more year of his big signing bonus. But $13 million is a lot of money for one season.
And if he stays healthy, it'll be even bigger.
I mean, right, and that's a great point, John, because Pierre-Paul, while he looked like his old self at times this year, he did not look like his self for 16-game stretch. And maybe he never will, because it's been like 3 years since he was the biggest. Remember, he was like the J.J. Watt
JPP?
Kind of freak of the league almost? Yeah, that hasn't been the case lately. And he's got a chance now to make it the case because he's probably healthier than he's ever been. He looked better than he has in a long time last season. And if he goes out and has a big year, he'll not only have gotten the franchise tag money, but he'll have a much better chance of getting a big contract after that. So if I'm Pierre Paul, I'm fine with being franchise tagged. I'm glad they still want me.
Pierre Paul making just a shade under $15 million this season.
Jeez,
with,
is it that
with
high?
That franchise tag, yeah. $2 million more than Justin Houston, too.
Because of the outside linebacker
that's
thing?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really interesting debate. And we had the Terrell Suggs had that a few years ago. And that, to me, is a blurrier line than the Jimmy Graham debate of last year. I thought Graham was a tight end. I thought they ruled correctly on that. I like the logic where they said if he lined up less than, I think it was 4 yards removed from the formation, so 4 yards or closer to the line, to the, you know, the lineman up front, that made him a tight end. I like that. That makes sense to me. I don't know how you call Justin Houston an outside linebacker by definition because he's coming off the edge a lot. He just doesn't happen to have his hand down in the dirt. They've got to do something. They need to differentiate between 4-3 and 3-4 outside linebackers for this stuff. The problem is then it gets into the argument of what's a 4-3 and what's a 3-4 because we've talked about that before where there are 3-4 schemes that play one gap stuff, which would make it really a 4-3 scheme. And sometimes you'll see, not often, but you know, you could, theoretically, it could be a 4-3 scheme that plays two gaps at times. It's more of what's a 3-4. So that's a rant. Justin Houston, we don't know if he'll play.
Miami Dolphins used the transitional tag on Charles Clay. And a few guys that a little surprising that they didn't get tagged. And we can start off with DeMarco Murray, who now becomes a free agent. The talks have apparently slowed between Murray and the Cowboys. The Cowboys are saying, go test the market.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And obviously, they can't tag both Bryant and Murray. You only have one.
Right. Franchise. No, yeah, right. Well, I
and I know you know that. I'm just, we're just clerical work.
Yeah,
there.
I thought Dez Bryant was going to get the long-term deal, and they would tag Murray and try to make it
really?
Work in one. Yeah, I thought it would all work swimmingly.
I see. I don't think they're – I think they realize that Murray, for one, keep in mind, he was injury-prone.
Before last season,
for his entire career. And that's how – because I need to remember this. I criticized Dallas for allowing Murray and Bryant and Jason Garrett to all have their contracts expire at the same time while they figured out Garrett's thing. And he's improved a lot as a coach. And you, especially I learned that at the Combine, just hearing people around the league talk about him too, a good appreciation for his.
Giving a lot of credit to Garrett?
Yeah, and just the way he's, I think he's, my guess is Garrett learned the hard way that less is more. Early in his career. So we're going to simplify things and coach differently. And they have done that on offense and defense, and it's worked. So anyway, they got Garrett figured out. Now the question, why is Murray and Bryant, why are their contracts expiring at the same time? Well, they didn't know they'd have to re-sign Murray because he was injury prone for a lot of years. He looked like a classic running back where he gets in his mid-20s and let someone else go sign him. Let him become Sean Green, a big bruising back who's going to play 11 or 12 games a year or something like that. But he broke out and had 1,800 yards. The thing is, his offensive line was a big factor in that, and I think Dallas is telling you that right now by not going after Murray. I've kind of assumed all along that Dez Bryant would have a franchise tag and a tough contract. It doesn't surprise me that we're here with him because I think he's not an easy player to figure out. Necessarily. I think they're right to let Murray, though, go test the market.
Do you think when everything shakes out, Murray does end up back in Dallas?
I think some team will overpay for DeMarco Murray.
Okay.
Especially because it's going to be a big sell to the fans. And Joseph Randall was excellent for them last year. Now, I don't know if he's a full-time guy, but behind that old line, you could even make the argument. I'm not doing this, but you could make the argument he was better than Murray behind that line last year.
Whoa.
Just style-wise. Now, would he be better than Murray with a full slate of carries like Murray got? Probably not. But if Joseph Randall's that good, and I believe he is, because a lot of guys behind that line, you can't overstate how good that offensive line was last season, in the run game especially. If Randall's good enough, then you find one other guy who's good enough, and your bar of expectation for what makes a guy good enough is much lower because your offensive line's so good.
Another running back apparently rumored to Maybe land in Dallas, Adrian Peterson.
That would make no sense at all. I mean, because of what we don't need to go over, what we just talked about. But yeah, I also heard that at the Combine too. Coaches believing
starting
that
to float around
going to happen. Well, float around years ago when Jerry Jones tampered with it.
Exactly.
And I mean, Peterson's a tough guy to figure as well because he's got a big salary. I think the best scenario is he stays in Minnesota and just takes his money.
You think he plays in Minnesota again?
I think he's going to realize that's where he's going to get paid. They don't. They have all the. They hold all the cards. Peterson's
still under contract. People forget that.
Yeah. So what's Peterson going to do? Not report? Because the Vikings found out, as good as Adrian Peterson is, the Vikings also found out that they could live without Peterson last year. I mean, life does go on, and you look at their results after he got suspended. He was suspended very early in the season. The Vikings still went on to have, what were they, 7-9? I think it was. Something like that.
Yeah,
they still had a respectable record. Now, look, I'm looking at their schedule now. There were a lot of back-to-back losses there, and that's concerning. They won six games without Peterson. So it's not like this team was an utter embarrassment once he disappeared, and it's not like they've been a dynamic team with him in the lineup. It's a passing league now. Your running backs have to be able to do a lot of things. Peterson's a battering ram. He's one of the best of all time at it. But I don't think the value's there anymore for that kind of thing.
Now
the same guy as DeMarco Murray. Murray's a better in the passing game than Peterson, though.
Now, that opinion goes against what Peter wrote just last week, saying that he sees doubtful that Adrian Peterson goes back to Minnesota and sees this maybe shaking out as a trade scenario.
Who trades for him? Who wants his salary at that? I mean,
it's not crazy. It's like $13 million, right? I mean, that's what you're going to pay in Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, it's $13 million. The franchise tag value of a running back, though, is $11 million. So, I mean, you're paying the ultimate top price for Peterson, but as you should. He deserves that. He's the best in the league, or certainly one of them. I don't know, though. I just don't see which team would want to build the offense in that way. I wouldn't do it.
Well,
not for the cost. I mean, if you give me Adrian Peterson, I'm happy.
Think of the scenario with DeMarco Murray, though. You're probably going to have to pay in that range for him, too.
Right, someone's going to overpay. That's why I said someone's going to overpay for Murray.
And if you're the Cowboys, probably rather have Adrian Peterson talent-wise. You would rather have Adrian Peterson.
They don't have all the money in the world.
So you're saying there's
chance. What is this? Dumb? God. See, that's right there. That solves my argument. John Engel makes a Dumb and Dumber reference, and that tells you what kind of film he's into, what kind of movies he likes to watch.
No, it just means I don't restrict myself and think I'm too couthy for the rest of the film.
Oh, and he's right. You can't see this, but he's raising his eyebrows as he says.
I didn't raise any eyebrows.
I don't know on Peterson. It'll be fun to watch that play out. My guess is he's back in Minnesota. But Peter doesn't, as we've said, he doesn't write stuff unless he has good, solid information behind it, even if he's not reporting. So
there you go.
Someone told him something interesting.
Can't wait. It'll probably happen in the next
few weeks.
The first big signing, though, Cleveland Browns going after Josh McCown. You think he's the week one starter?
I do, yeah, because I, as I've said, I've heard that Manziel. I've heard from that's good, solid whisper. Now I'm being Peter here.
Through the grapevine?
Yeah, now I'm Peter. I've heard that Manziel's not even in the plans for this season. Like, they're not thinking he's going to start at all or just they're not counting on him.
That was going around the combine?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
So, smart move by Cleveland then?
Manziel's not in the plans, too, because he can't play.
McCown quickly became the top free agent quarterback.
Wasn't that funny?
Yeah, right.
I saw him at the combine, too, having his breakfast with the Bear guys.
Did you talk to him?
No, because he was at breakfast with the Bears. Yeah. Didn't we go over that? No, I was on the. Oh, this was on Will Brinson's podcast.
Cheating.
I was cheating.
You're cheating.
They were promoting MMQB podcast.
Yeah.
And we'll have Will Brinson on, and we'll promote. I'm not going to say it now because I don't want to give a free promotion, but we're going to promote whatever podcast that he does over there at one of the big networks,
at one of those websites that does football stuff.
Yeah, Eye on Football blog. That's a hint. But anyway, what would you guess Josh McCown would wear to that kind of a meeting, to a breakfast meeting with the GM, the head coach, and offensive coordinator? So Adam Gase, John Fox, and the new guy,
jeans,
Ryan Pace.
Jeans, tennis shoes, and a polo shirt.
What kind? All right, so tennis shoes. That's what you're guessing.
White K-Swiss.
Combat boots.
No.
Yeah. Some form of... Now, not like a hardcore, like, gothy kind, but the kind that still had a pretty good toe. You know, like
that you're working in.
A small... Oh, God, yeah. You're doing work.
Bootstraps kind of guy.
Yep. Yeah. So he'll be great for Cleveland, right? Because that's for blue collar, all that bull crap that people like to talk about, whatever that blue collar means. I mean, what does that mean? What does it mean?
Especially for 52 guys or 53 guys who aren't from Cleveland.
Right, and are making millions and millions and millions of dollars. But he's one of you, Cleveland.
They adapted.
He's going to be what they need there. Now, clearly they don't feel that Brian Hoyer's worth re-signing. And my guess is that's a thing about market value. The Hoyer's going to want more than they want to pay for him. They've had Hoyer around, so I even though these are the guys that drafted Manziel, I bow to their opinion on that. They know Hoyer pretty well, and we didn't think he was great last season. He had good moments, but he's one of those guys that the more they saw him on film, the worse he played, and he did some stuff that was fairly inexcusable. I guess you can't be fairly inexcusable, but
I wonder if there's like a timeline out there with the headlines all assembled of the Browns, just regarding the Browns from week one to week 17.
Or even way back in
the Browns. Summer. Are they for real? The Browns are for real. They trended down.
And that happens with teams that are trying to get themselves up. And I think they're going in the right direction. They believe that they just need a placeholder quarterback and they can make the playoffs. I think that's what they're saying with this
point. Oh, well, yeah, obviously. Josh McCown's not your long-term.
Well, of course, yeah, right. I mean, he's a 3-year deal, $14 million, which that's a pretty good rate to get for a bridge quarterback, which is what they're getting here. And I think they like that he's a developmental guy. It's interesting, the developmental guy being like he'll help Manziel develop. I mean, he's a mentor. That's what I've heard. It's interesting that the Bears didn't want to sign him, or at least that deal didn't work out. I have no idea why, but I would think you'd need a backup for Cutler, especially if they're being non-committal about Cutler. Maybe they see someone in the draft. Maybe they're interested by that.
Yeah, John Fox hasn't given us anything. Not one.
Well, why
bit.
Would he? No, I mean, no head coach or GM should talk to the media at all this time of year.
No, but wouldn't you expect if and when they talk to the media, a stance of Jay's our guy. We're going with you.
Maybe, yeah, because
that's pretty common.
Because you can be lying there and it's not going to hurt you.
Before we get to our offseason breakdown of the AFC South, let's spend the next 15 minutes getting a little smarter. We're happy to now be joined by Andrew Brandt, business of football columnist for Sports Illustrated and the MMQB. Andrew, now that it's franchise tag week, I guess you could say, we're hearing a lot of different tags being placed on players. What goes into making that decision for a front office to tag someone, and what's kind of the difference between a traditional franchise tag and a transitional tag?
Yeah, what happens is we have this two-week period every year, and everyone, as I say on Twitter all the time, deadlines for action. Everybody waits till the last minute. It started 2 weeks ago and then cleaned up today with five tags and one transition. Really, what you decide as a front office is you like the guy, you want to keep him around, but maybe you have concerns about, A, the negotiation where he's asking for way more than you want to pay, or B, there's some maybe maturity concerns, maybe emotional concerns, and maybe some concerns about motivation. So you'd rather keep the guy on a year-to-year earning basis rather than sock in a lot of guaranteed money. I look at Dez Bryant that way. He is a game-changing, perhaps a generational player at his position. But I just sense the Cowboys have concerns about maturation and giving him a ton of money at this point in his career and would rather go year to year. It's a lot of money, $12.8 million, but it's paid during the season, so no check even comes until September, and you're not worried about, again, in his case, socking in probably $35 to $40 million guaranteed, which is, of course, what he wants. Transition tag is the same as franchise tag, a little different in terms of instead of calculating based on top five in the position, you calculate based on top 10. It gives you a lower number. The downside is you don't have a right to match. Having said that, I think it's an underused tactic because, first of all, whether it's franchise or transition, it's very rare to see an offer sheet. And you don't have to worry about the big number. I used it on a tight end, as the Dolphins did today, way back in my day with the Packers on a guy named Bubba Franks. And the reason there was Bubba's agent and I had real difference of opinion on where he fit in the marketplace, and we just said, hey, let's let the marketplace decide. So if you bring me an offer from another team that's where you think he's going to be, we probably won't match. And if you don't bring an offer, we'll do a contract based on where we think he is, which ended up being the case, the latter case. So I've used it before. I think it's an underused weapon, and only one team went for it this year with Charles Clay.
And if there's no draft picks handed over for transition tag, or there are draft picks, like the franchise tag?
No, it's a completely right of first refusal thing, no draft picks attached. But, you know, Andy, I think there's way too much made of these draft picks for franchise player, especially with the value of first-round picks. No one's given up two first-round picks. No one is. And you can call me on it if someone does it later in the spring, but no one's given up two first-round picks for these guys.
Right. The only time I can remember it happening, and you would know this more than I would, Andrew, is Peerless Price with the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
Years of 2003, I think it was, and that did not work out well for Atlanta.
No, and I think we go back that and maybe Joey Galloway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
From going from Seattle to Dallas, who was a good player but not worth that.
Right.
And now, as we talk about so often, with draft picks worth so much currency, 5 years of low earnings and having these guys around, I mean, at young ages, I think those are so valuable right now.
Andrew, when I was at the Combine a few weeks ago, I was speaking, I guess it was to an agent, a guy who I've known, Brian McIntyre, I'll say his name, because I've known him for a lot of years. A lot of people know Brian, and he has an unbelievable understanding of how this stuff works, the salary cap and all that. And he was saying that people focus too much on the cap and not enough on cash on hand or cash spending, or he had some term involving cash that I don't quite remember now. But basically, it's the amount of money teams have. And I wanted to ask you about that, if you know what he was getting at there, and if the salary cap is overrated, and if so, then what's underrated?
I definitely agree with him. He and I are on the same wavelength there. I just think the media and fans, and I know I'm part of the media now, but there's way too much focus on cap room and what this team has cap room, and they can't make this move because they don't have cap room, and what's the cap number on this guy? Listen, the best-managed teams match up cap and cash. In other words, you have a $10 million cap number on somebody, you should be paying him $10 million. You shouldn't be paying like a $15 million bonus and then a $2 million salary, and you're paying $17 million, but about $12 million of it's going into future years. So the teams, I guess my point is, if Team A and Team B both want a player, there's ways that Team B, who's cap-strapped, can make it happen just as Team A. But these teams are the ones kicking the can down the road, credit card spending, and they just look at ways to sort of create short-term room and bring on long-term pain. This is what happened with Ndamukong Suh and the Lions. They kept pushing cap room away from the present, create more room for the short-term, and they left themselves with a $27 million number that they couldn't possibly do today, so he's a free agent. And one thing I always tell agents and players, a lot of them call me to ask about contracts, I say, forget the cap. Forget it. That's the team's problem. Pay no attention to it. What's the cash? What's the money, the real money? I'll put it this way, and I know maybe I haven't explained it fully. Just think of it this way. Cap is an accounting mechanism. That's all it is. It's an accounting mechanism. It's cash what matters. How much are you getting paid? Not how much cap room. How much are you getting paid? That's the focus.
What's the differential then from one team to the next in the amount of cash? Because we can all see who's over the cap and who's under the cap and all that, but are there gigantic gaps between team, you know, the first team in this list in cash and the 32nd team?
Well, it's certainly not like baseball. That's an uncapped league where you have Yankees and Dodgers spending upwards of $200 million. I think Dodgers approach $300 million. And then you have teams like the Marlins and whoever, Astros, paying $40 to $50 million. You know, $150, $200 million gaps between the high and low. Because of the cap, even though we do have the soft cap of the prorated bonuses in the NFL, because there is a cap, you don't have these wide spreads. So I would say on a $120, $30 million cap, you'll have a spread of maybe the low end paying $100, $105 million, and the high end paying $170 million, something like that. And again, the reason why teams are overpaying is because of prorated bonuses. So you give a guy a five-year deal with a $20 million bonus, it only counts $4 million on the cap. You paid the guy $20 million. But again, you're pushing $16 million into future years.
And that $20 million comes out of, let's say that team had $170 million, so that $20 million, they've got to have that on hand then, because they're giving the guy that check that day for the signing bonus.
Well, that's another misconception. When we talk about $20 million, yes, that would count as first-year cash from an accounting point of view, but as I'd done for many years, both as an agent and as a team guy, you don't pay these bonuses in one fell swoop. That's a whole nother negotiation. So you, depending on the amount of the bonus, you have deferrals in there, especially if you're concerned about a guy's spending issues. You're going to defer it out as much as you can. And you may actually use the non-deferral of it, to get a little technical, to help you in a negotiation. For instance, if I'm down to quick strokes with an agent on getting a guy done, and say we agree, you know, a $10 million bonus, but, you know, we talk about long deferrals, I'll maybe say, all right, let's do a $9 million bonus, and I'll give it all in this year. So that's the kind of thing you negotiate.
Interesting. Andrew, given what you've said about the cap and the illusion of the cap, let's take an example like the Saints, who we know have a league-high $20 million over the cap at this point. How do they go about creating cap space and the ability to spend during free agency, given their position financially?
Yeah, they're a team that's had issues with cap spending, and they are a perfect example of how the fact they have zero cap room every year doesn't hold them back. Now, at some point, they're going to pay the piper. But, you know, and I wrote about this in this week's Sports Illustrated coming up. They had the third least cap in the NFL last year, and they signed the highest in terms of guaranteed money, highest priced free agent in the NFL last year. So never look at a team and say they don't have cap room when you think about who's going to sign who. They signed Jarris Bird, $26.4 million guaranteed. As I said, highest guaranteed money in the NFL for free agency last year. Team that would least likely be a candidate to spend that kind of money. Now, what do they do? Well, they've cut players. They traded Darren Sproles. They couldn't keep a guy making $3, $4 million. They do restructures of all these contracts. They structured Drew Brees' contract where he made $40 million his first year in 2012, $37 million of it in a bonus. Imagine how much of that is being pushed into the future. If and when Drew Brees ever leaves that team, they're going to have a huge hole in their cap. In other words, they're going to count $15 to $20 million for Drew Brees, and he's not going to be anywhere near the place.
That was going to be
pitfalls you have.
That was going to be my next question for you, though, was Drew Brees. What would you do if you were in the situation that the Saints are in with that monster cap hit that he'll have coming into this next season? Do you restructure a deal like that as he's only got
2 years on it, so
you got to extend then, right? Isn't that the only option?
Well, there's no way to really. I mean, once you make your bed with a $37 million bonus, I mean, that never goes away. All that extra prorated cap room. I guess what I've been saying all along, when you match up cash and cap, you want to get to a point in your cap management. And I was fortunate that we got to it in Green Bay and they continued to do it, and some teams are still doing it, other teams, where if you're going to pay Drew Brees $40 million, pay as much as you can on the cap that year. Like Peyton Manning, kudos to the Broncos. Every year he has no bonus in that contract. So first year he made 18, the next year he made 20, the next year he made 20. No proration. So if and when Peyton Manning was going to retire, they will have zero counting on the cap for Peyton Manning, where Drew Brees will have, you know, $15 to $20 million.
Interesting.
That's how teams get in trouble. That's how teams stay ahead of the curve. A team like Jacksonville or Oakland this year can sign a huge free agent and say the first-year number is going to be $20 million. Well, they can load all that $20 million into cap and cash, and have no future proration on that player.
Andrew, last question for you. What's the biggest difference now, along the vein of all the stuff we're talking about, what's the biggest difference now in the NFL and the way teams are doing business versus even just in the early 2000s when you were in Green Bay?
Well, I think like what I just said, I think there's a little more prudence in management, and I think this sort of goes along with analytics. I think people understand you can't live only for the present. You have to protect the future. I know, you know, everyone talks about going forward and trying to be that team that gets it every year, but the cap is a self-regulating mechanism. You can't do that. I think the other thing, and we're going to see this next week, I think that teams have gotten smarter about free agency, that they understand the core values in football, which are trusting young players, have your coaches trust young players, and really trust your scouts, that you can build, you can draft and develop. You don't have to have quick fixes. And you're seeing less and less good players get to market. That means teams are locking them up, teams are not as worried, and teams go into free agency and they have a jaundiced eye. In other words, you're going to see teams say, well, why is this guy on the market? You know, if the incumbent team doesn't want him, why should we want him? And then so I'll leave you with my prediction for free agency, which is the, what's really happened the last 3 years and how it's changed, which is there are going to be some golden ticket winners on Tuesday and Wednesday. Ndamukong Suh, Randall Cobb, Jeremy Maclin, Devin McCourty, and others, Terrence Knighton. But after 10 or 12 of those guys, we're going to move pretty quickly, I think, into the musical chairs phase of free agency, where maybe after 2-3 days, then people are just trying to find a home before the money runs out. Everyone's trying to get a seat. And that's what I think free agency has become, which is very different than 10, 15 years ago. It was robust for maybe 7 to 10 days. And I think it's going to go down to 2 to 3 days before we're in the musical chairs phase.
Once again, Andrew Brandt, MMQB Sports Illustrated. No one does it better than him when it comes to this kind of stuff. Andrew, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
All right, Andy, before we move on to the AFC South, let's run through some of the names of the guys that hit the chopping block this last week, and you tell me in yes or no answer if it was justified.
Okay.
All right, we'll start off with the Cardinals dumping Darnell Dockett, 34 years old.
Yes, because you don't know what you're getting with him coming off the injury.
Yeah,
I think he can still play, but we got to, you know, he's old and we got to see that.
Nearly $7 million in savings, too, by getting out of that last year.
Yeah.
All right, Chris Canty, 32, Baltimore Ravens.
I want to say yes because he's going to cost a little bit as well, and they've got defensive line depth, and especially Timmy Jernigan. I think he gets more snaps.
Steven Jackson, Atlanta Falcons running back.
Yes, there, because what are you really getting out of that running game when he's been there? I mean, everybody ought to respect Steven Jackson, but what has that running game done for them?
Someone who I actually think is getting a little more useful, Reggie Bush, only 29 years old, Detroit
Lions.
I was
a little surprised on that one. I think it's justified because Theo Riddick is, I thought he was better than Bush last year, and they agreed with me because they played him in the two-minute situation down the stretch. He's very similar to Bush, just a little quicker. Now, he's not as good receiving split out from the formation as Bush, perhaps, or not quite as polished, but I'd have to go through my notes. I seem to recall him making some catches as a receiver. Anyway, you got Riddick, you got Drake Bell, who's pretty good, so I would say yes, justified to cut Bush. I'd sign Bush, though, if I'm a team. Not as my guy, you know, but I'd for $2 or $3 million as part of a 1-2 punch, I'd sign Bush.
That's probably what he'll get, too.
Yeah, and he'll join D'Angelo Williams, who I would imagine is next on your list or close to it here.
Go right with D'Angelo Williams.
Okay, was he next?
Yes, he was.
Awesome.
Look at us.
Yeah, look at us.
May not agree on much, but.
D'Angelo Williams, same kind of deal there as Bush. I think he can still play. He's had the injuries, though. And what did they save by getting rid of him?
I'm reading here about $2 million, only eating $260,000. So
that's a lot less than I would have guessed.
It seems pretty smart.
Yeah, so, well, they must decide that then there's some football decision going into this. It's not all finances in.
Okay, how about Brian Hartline? Mike Wallace not willing to restructure.
We knew Hartline, didn't we? We knew Hartline months ago. I wrote that in the preview that, you know, Hartline will get cut. I wrote that somewhere.
But I think that was a lot more contingent on what Mike Wallace would do with his deal, because if Mike Wallace is willing to restructure that god-awful deal that he signed last year.
Well, I guess he could be willing, I guess. Yeah. I'm not surprised on Hartline because his salary was bloated compared to his production in the new system last year.
Matthias Kiwanuka, New York Giants.
Yeah, good solid career. What'd they save on that one?
$4.825 million for Kiwanuka.
Yeah, so that's good, necessary to move on from. Someone will get him. He won't get a lot of, you know, he's not going to get big money, though.
Kendall Langford, St. Louis Rams.
Another situation where they've got other guys that they can go with. Langford's a fine player. He's been decent for him. But Aaron Donald's going to be getting almost every snap next year. Remember, that was not the case here in their rookie season. So you put Aaron Donald next to Michael Brockers. Now they have nobody behind him other than maybe Eugene Sims, who I like a lot. But you can draft depth behind them.
Miami Dolphins freeing up about $5 million in space. Cortland Finnegan getting cut.
I think you explained it yourself right there.
That's enough.
Justified, yeah.
Now we'll get started on our breakdown of the AFC South. The Indianapolis Colts coming in with about $41 million in cap space to build around Andrew Luck, maybe solidify that defense.
You almost called them the Indiana Colts there, didn't you?
Did I?
Almost. And
I didn't even notice.
I think they need to be that. Why are we going Indianapolis? That's such a mouthful. And if you say Indiana, that covers the whole state. I would imagine that's better marketing for them.
You want
just like Indiana Pacers.
You're always suggesting the change of team names, the change of last names, if they're too difficult to say.
Well, what you're like taking the long route to refer to there is my concern about who are the two, Dennard and Dennard.
Yeah, that's one of them.
Yeah,
there's
on
other
the
ones.
Page. That's it. I mean, for the most part, that's it.
I'm
not on air. I'm going to criticize names.
You don't
off
like,
air, yeah.
You don't like Stephen Pia either. Pia.
Because of the
Pia,
and that's why.
Because of the consecutive vowels that just are a mess.
Well, but I got used to Pia, and he played so well that I thought he could.
Six and a half sacks. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it was more about more in sacks, John.
I'm just throwing.
But
little
I'm impressed
tidbits
that you knew that because you just this was Stephen Pia is clearly not on the outline because we're in the Colts here and we need to get.
So with the release of Ricky Jean-Francois.
Nice. That's one I didn't like either.
And
I didn't like that one either.
And a bit of a faltering Arthur Jones. Any chance this might be a Ndamukong Suh destination with all that money laying around?
I don't think so because
– I mean, we could do this for every team with
– with Ndamukong Suh. You're fascinated
by
Suh. I don't think he's this over-the-top player that everyone thinks he is. He's great, but I don't think he's a generational guy.
Seems to be the first topic whenever free agency is brought up with anyone. Where's Suh going to go? Staying with the Lions.
Well, because he's the only really big, huge-time guy left, right, because of all the franchise tags.
Yeah. But
who else is out there? Cobb's probably the next biggest guy.
Yeah, Byron Maxwell's not that big of a name to most people.
I was a little surprised Cobb didn't get tagged, by the way. We need to talk about that.
$9 million? It would have been $13 million. He wants $9 million.
Does he want $9 million?
That's what he was asking for. He was asking for $9 million a year. Don't give him $13 million.
Well, okay. Well, I don't know. We'll see. I would be surprised if he gets away. Let's take another stab at this because we're trying to do Colts.
And Ndamukong Suh in Indianapolis.
Colts. I think the old Colts, yes, a one-gap scheme, but that's the Dwight Freeney era Colts. And they didn't ever have that kind of money. They had Peyton Manning. These Colts, no. I wouldn't pay what Ndamukong Suh would cost because they can find – it's a style of scheme that doesn't work. They're more – you know, they do some 3-4 stuff. They're built around pressure. Suh would be very good in that kind of a scheme, but he's better in a 4-3. And if you're going to pay a guy top dollar, then you need to be paying him to play in the scheme that's best for you. Ask the Buccaneers and Darrell Reeves.
So what does that mean, one gap? What does that alignment look like?
So one gap means you're trying to penetrate. You're trying to just you fire off the ball and try to get between the guards and the center, the guard and center, in Sue's case, or the tackle and the guard probably in Sue's case. Versus a two-gap scheme where you're trying to control the line of scrimmage and really prevent offensive linemen from getting movement. So you're not attacking off the ball so much. You're immediately trying to hold ground. I mean, that's the simplest term. And I think most people get that. And it's good that you ask about that because it gets into when we say a guy doesn't fit in this scheme, could he do that? Suh could do that. Suh could control two men. He's got, and that's not a strength thing, by the way. People think, oh, it's strong, get a big guy in there. Yes and no. Yes, in that you want to have strength anytime you're playing football, and especially if you're asking a guy to battle more bodies. But do you really think there's a single guy in the NFL that can hold two giant offensive linemen himself?
No.
It's more of a technique thing, and it's how you get. I learned a lot about this at the combine, actually. Different coaches, really, I went over this in depth with them. I loved it. And it's hard to do with it. All this stuff's hard to do without a telestrator. But basically, in a one or in a two gap scheme, you want to try to shoot into one of the gaps yourself and then have the strength to push the blocker into the other gap. And that's how you fill and block off two gaps versus one gap where you're not trying to do anything to the blocker but just get by him. So Suh has the strength to shoot into one gap and then push the blocker into the other gap and try to control it that way. But these one-gap guys are hard to find, and I think Sue's at his best if he's getting upfield and just trying to get in the backfield himself.
So who's an ideal one-gap guy? I'm just quickly.
Gerald McCoy.
Okay.
And then an ideal two-gap guy would be Vince Wilfork, style-wise. I mean, he's got a little bit of an
push everyone into it.
And he's
other.
A bigger guy, a little quickness off the ball. But like another guy, and I'll give you a smaller name and a smaller body because – I said, you know, you don't have to be a gigantic guy to do these two-gap things, although you do need girth. But another guy is Mike DeVito for the Chiefs. He's coming off an injury this year, so we don't know what he'll be. But conceptually, Mike DeVito's always been a good two-gap player, and he's got excellent technique and an understanding of angles and how to battle with bodies around him, and he's had a very nice career for himself.
So Jean-Francois, obviously, part of—
That was a two-gap guy, by the way, Jean-Francois yep. is. Cut Arthur Jones kind of is. He's a hybrid.
Cut more of a cap casualty.
Yeah,
$5 million
contract. Was. Yeah, well, because they weren't getting quite their money's worth out of him. And
they didn't get their money's worth out of Arthur Jones last year.
Well, he had injuries last year. Give him another year. He had the ankle injury, and a very good point was made to me. In fact, it was made about Arthur Jones at the Combine.
Convenient.
Just because a guy comes off an injury in 5 or 6 weeks, which is what Jones had, that doesn't mean he's going to be ready to play right away. I mean, you've got to get back into football shape then, and it's mid-season, so you haven't had all the support around you for that because everyone's in the middle of the season. So Arthur Jones battled injuries in the wrong ways last year, and that affected him even when he was on the field. That's what I've been told, and I would agree with that because I saw what he was in Baltimore, and he was pretty good in Baltimore. Now, maybe he's not a starter type either, though. I mean, he was never asked to do as much in Baltimore as he is to do here. Give it one more year to find out about him.
Given everything we just talked about, the Colts had an incredibly difficult time pressuring the quarterback last season, even with Robert Mathis coming back after injury. You need a pass rusher here.
Yes, you do, because Bjorn Warner's not the guy for that. I still think he's got a place in the league, and I don't think they're as low on him as it would seem. They benched him for the championship game. I mean, they made him inactive. They really benched him. But I don't think they're that low on him. I think that was because they felt he was just, you know, he was wearing down. He wasn't playing well for that stretch. But he's not an edge burner. So you need someone other than Mathis, even because you used a first-round pick on Warner and you're not getting quite what you wanted there.
Colts moved on from LaRon Landry at safety. Also released, not released, Mike Adams and Sergio Brown. They're both becoming
free
agents.
Yeah.
So. You also need two safeties.
At least, yeah. I mean, maybe three if you want to be interchangeable. And all three of these guys played because they rotated Brown with Landry at times, partly because Landry's another example. He came off the injury, and he played only a few snaps the first few weeks and came along slowly. And by the end of the year, he had fully supplanted Brown as the starter. But obviously, they didn't feel he was worth the money either. And he did okay things, but he had limitations in coverage. And if you're going to be a blitzing team, then you don't want to have a lot of guys. And it's also a disguise-oriented team, which they're not big time on that. But you don't want to have guys with limitations in coverage if in that scheme. They asked their safeties to cover in that scheme.
On the other side of the ball, it's no secret that Indy's run game has struggled in recent years. We kind of joke about Trent Richardson. He may not even be with the team next year. Probably won't be with the team next year. Given their top-ranked passing attack and having Andrew Luck, is a run game that important to this team? Or can you win without it?
You can win without it. We've seen them. I mean, they were run game from the Super Bowl this year. And their running game was – although their running game actually got stronger down the stretch. We overlooked it because we were so busy making fun of Trent Richardson all year
long.
Boom
Heron looked a little useful.
Yeah, then they don't have a great offensive line, and so they never dominated with their running game. But at the end of, like, a great example is at the end of that Cincinnati wild card game, they were able to run out the clock, essentially, on the ground. Their running game got strong late in contest last year when they needed it to get strong. Now, they did that with backup guys, and so you wonder, you know, is that enough? I don't think they want Andrew Luck carrying as much of a load as he has so far. I mean, they're putting a lot on him. And if he doesn't have a great offensive line, then he's being asked to drop back against salivating pass rushers probably 30 times a game. He gets hit a lot. At some point, that'll catch up to him. You have to believe it will. So I would think they will try to find a running back and build something for a running game. I think their offensive line, they'll believe it'll come back together by being healthy because they have invested in it over the years. But I think they will find a running back to try to balance that offense out because They can win by playing that way, but they can win by playing balance too, and that's a much safer long-term plan.
In order to reach that balance, they may actually have to get a playmaker on the outside as well. Reggie Wayne may be approaching retirement here pretty soon. And
well, but John, I would argue that they drafted that guy already in Moncrief.
You think Moncrief is the supplement to T.Y. Hilton?
I do. I do. I think he is, and that's going to be a speedy 1-2 punch on the perimeter. They signed Hakeem Nicks. That, you know, that was kind of meh. And so,
well, he's a free agent now. So.
Yeah, so I doubt they re-sign him. They might if no one else takes him. They get minimum. So I guess you're right, because Nicks is a free agent. They need someone to eventually supplant Wayne. But I think Moncrief can do that in the starting lineup, so they need a new number three receiver.
What kind of guy is Moncrief? Is he more of just your burner, or can you teach him to run these routes?
I think he can run the full tree eventually. I'd have to look closer at that as far as what he did last year. But, you know, New England felt it was necessary to put Revis on him in last year, and that was a little bit because they had certain double-team plans for Hilton. But, you know, they're not going to put Revis on some slappy player.
Haven't you said in the past you're not super high on T.Y. Hilton? That he's not – I mean, you wouldn't put him in that premier group of wide receivers?
Have I said that? I
think we've talked about it. A bit of limitations there.
No, I'm high on T.Y. Hilton. I like him.
Okay.
I don't think he's – no, he's not in that premium group of receivers because
– it's also a deep group.
of receivers. There are a lot of good receivers right now. He's not in that group, and we saw that in the AFC Championship game when he disappeared. I know he got doubled a lot in that, but he doesn't have the physicality to overcome that kind of a coverage approach. And he beats you. If you take away the over-the-top factor in the game – then you take away way too much of his game in order for him to be a premium receiver.
For the Houston Texans, who finished second in this division, pretty well-rounded defense, but a secondary that was suspect at times.
It was, and we probably need to mention Andre Johnson too, by the way, because as we're recording this, we find out that he's up for trade.
Or they'll release him.
Yeah, we'll get to the offense in a second, though. What were you saying? The secondary, they've got free agents there, right?
You got to re-sign or replace Kareem Jackson. That's a big one at the slot.
I think someone will overpay for Jackson. I hope they could bring him back. I think they'd like him because they developed him, and the last thing you want to do is develop a guy for another team, and that's what Jackson's done because he had a very fine season last year. Not a great one, but he had a good season, and they didn't realize that he could play the slot as well as he did. That was a pleasant surprise.
Kendrick Lewis, also in a similar position, unrestricted free agent. Good season last year.
Yeah, and I'd bring him back definitely because I think he's pretty proficient out of quarters coverage, and they do a ton of quarters coverage.
They do a lot of that. I've noticed that.
A lot, and they do a lot of – not just a lot of quarters, but they do a lot of things out of quarters. They don't just line up and take 1/4 of the field. They have unique matchup assignments that come out of quarters coverage.
And what do you mean by that? Combinations or?
Yeah, combination stuff. Here's an example: is Kendrick Lewis. In fact, it was on the interception that Bouye had against Philadelphia. I remember Kendrick Lewis. It had nothing to do with the interception play, but I noticed on that Lewis out of his quarter spot cut across the field to take the shallow dragging wide receiver. Matthews was the dragging wide receiver. That's a rangy ask for the safety. That's a lot to ask of his range out of quarters coverage, but they believe that you pick up your guy after he passes the linebackers. So they match up in man coverage out of quarters pretty quickly. Quarters, I need to probably explain what the heck we're talking about. In quarters, it's zone to start out with. Each player, there's four zones. Each guy's got a quarter of the field. Cornerback, safety, cornerback across the field. As a receiver gets to a certain depth within those zones, then the zone coverage turns into man coverage, and you go take that receiver in man-to-man, whoever's in your quarter. While Houston asks their guys to take man coverage much earlier than a lot of other teams, and they ask for more man matchups. As soon as the receiver crosses the linebacker depth, Houston's defensive backs match up in man coverage.
Eric Weddle talked about that on this podcast too, the versatility out of quarters.
Yeah, he did, and that was on that play that I got wrong about the big play.
Oh, see, that was I didn't purposefully point that
out. No, I know. I'm just bringing that up, and I talked about that at the combine a lot too because that's a play you learn from. That's a great example that out of that quarters coverage concept that people probably don't remember the play now.
Probably not.
But Weddle picked up a certain receiver, and the cornerback was supposed to replace him over
against
the top.
It's Jacksonville.
Yeah, another quarters concept. There's just a lot you can do out of quarters. But Houston asks as much as any team in the league out of quarters. They ask as much out of their DBs as any team. And I think Lewis responded okay to that this year. And in the first year in that kind of scheme, and Lewis had played in Kansas City, so they'd done that a little bit as well, with less success, by the way. But in the first year, I think Lewis played well enough that okay and pretty good. That's that you'll take that if you're Houston, because you can you believe that can turn in to very good, maybe not probably not great with him, but very good with more experience in the scheme. So I would re-sign Lewis. The other thing is DJ Swearinger has limitations, and he's not good in space, and I don't think he's long for this scheme. And so you want to be retaining your safeties now, because I'm not sure you build around Swearinger.
God, I love DJ Swearinger.
I had this smile on your face. I wondered what that was
I
about.
Love him, man. He flies around the field, big hits.
Yeah, well, he flies in the wrong spots
ball,
at times.
The ball
and that's
hit
the...
him in the face a couple of times when he could be getting an interception. He goes for the hit instead. It smacks him right in the helmet.
You know, remember they used to have the term tweener, and that was a bad thing.
He doesn't know what
tweener?
Position he is.
He's
like the
a
size
tweener.
Of a linebacker.
He's an old-school tweener in a bad way, because he's not big enough to play linebacker. And they learned that the hard way with their dime defense this season, and you'll notice late in the year they didn't use as much dime. Swearinger was not in the linebacker spot because of that. They also don't feel comfortable with him in space, and you can tell by the way they use him and what they ask him to do. So, I can't believe we've talked this long about Lewis, but I hope people get an understanding of the Texans, you know, approach to football as a whole organization, as a defense.
And might as well round off the secondary talk by saying that Jonathan Joseph probably has an extension coming as he carries – $12 million plus of a cap hit into next season in that final year of the deal. So probably an extension coming there. Would that be worthwhile?
I don't know, John. I think his cap hit, you can live with that, because the franchise number for a cornerback, what is it? It's like
it's a million more.
I think it's $13 million. Yeah.
I think it's about 13.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why it wasn't more confident in that. It's $13 million. Joseph is at $12 million. That's not bad, because they use Joseph like a number one guy at times.
It.
He's up there. He's a top 10 corner. He's not top 5, but he's top 10. So it's a respectable salary. He'll be 30 this season, so he'll be 31 that this time next year when they'll have to make a decision about him. And I think you just pay him out, write out the contract, and go from there. Now, if they do sign him long-term, I wouldn't blink at that either. I wouldn't be surprised.
Depending on how the draft and free agency both shake out, here in Houston, could this be potentially one of the better defenses in the AFC? Is that hard to say?
Yeah, I think it could be if they get the safety situation figured out. And they need
another.
Oh,
with Kendrick Lewis?
Mm-hmm.
With Kendrick Lewis?
Okay. Even if they bring Lewis, they need one more. Because I just as insurance, if nothing else, with Swearinger in there, they could also probably, even if they re-sign Kareem Jackson, they could maybe use one more cornerback.
On the offensive side of the ball, obviously the biggest area of concern for the Texans being at quarterback, where it's kind of hard to tell who will be the guy week one. Are you going to retain Ryan Mallett, who's an unrestricted free agent, or stick with Ryan Fitzpatrick, or go for someone else?
Yeah, I have no idea on that one. I don't think they'll go after Mallett. I thought
– you'd probably get him on the cheap, though. I think that's the main
– You might. The thing about Mallett, he's tall. He's 6'7". And that impacts the way you throw. And if you go and look back at the history of football, there have only been 5 quarterbacks that have been that tall in the history of the league. They just don't come that tall because your angles of throwing.
And two of them
different.
Are in the league now?
Correct, yeah. Mallett and
Osweiler.
Yep, Brock Osweiler. We don't know what Osweiler is. It's too early to write off Mallett. But the other guys, and there may be 5 before them. It may be 7 total. Whatever it is, there haven't been any star, tall quarterbacks. 6'5", 6'6", is about the cutoff point. Certainly 6'6", probably 6'5". And the reason I bring it up is because Mallett's biggest issue last year was accuracy and the lack of consistency in his accuracy. And I wonder, his throwing motion is impacted by it. I wonder if his height has something to do with that. But there are people in the league who believe that Mallett's never going to be an accurate passer.
Luckily,
and if you're not an accurate passer, by the way, in this scheme, and as in most schemes, but especially in Bill O'Brien's Patriot-style scheme, then it's not going to work.
Luckily for the Texans, though, they have the 5th best running game last season, especially with a healthy Arian Foster. That's a good running attack.
It is if he's healthy, yeah. Now, they're not the zone team that they used to be. They don't do only zone stuff. And I think
they moved away from the Kubiak kind of style?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. Every team's going to do some form of zone and man blocking, and they're no different, and they're still very good in zone, so they do it often. But when we're evaluating their backfield and their running game, it's no longer appropriate to just say, well, here's the zone, find a one-cut runner and go.
So is that? But the zone is mainly in place there in Houston to utilize Arian Foster's ability to do those one cuts.
Yes, that's a good point. And Foster's an exceptional zone runner. He's very good.
Another guy like that, kind of LeSean McCoy. Haven't you pointed that out before,
too? Yeah, but McCoy's so much less disciplined than Foster because McCoy abandons the play designs a lot.
Just go straight to his speed and go.
He relies on his raw talent a lot. And it's boom or bust with him. And there are a lot of plays. It's a Barry Sanders thing. There are a lot of plays where he doesn't get the yards that he should. Now, the thing is, there are also a lot of plays where he gets a lot more than he should because he plays that way. Foster's not quite like that. He can find the cutback lane and get to it, but he doesn't seek it out with the same alacrity and eagerness that LeSean McCoy does. He's going to follow the flow of the play more.
A lot of painful seasons there in Houston when the only thing really to smile about was Andre Johnson. Now we're talking about possible trade, and if that doesn't go through, cutting of Andre Johnson to save $9 million a year. Do you see that?
That's what will happen because I don't see a team paying him that much. Yeah, not anymore. He's still a very respectable player. You can put him in. He'll catch 80 balls in a season for you. But he doesn't draw the double teams the way he used to because he doesn't have that speed over the top.
Did DeAndre Hopkins take over that number one role last season? Were you impressed with DeAndre Hopkins, 76 receptions?
I go back and forth on him. He has big play ability, but that big play ability is a little misleading as well because he's a one-speed guy. He doesn't have two gears. He's got one gear, and it's not particularly fast. He makes big plays, but he's not a burner. He doesn't run really well. So I don't know if he's a number one guy. I think he projects long-term best as a number two receiver. Kind of like, and I don't know if it's an appropriate comparison because I was real young when he played. I think he was more of a speedster, but kind of like an Alvin Harper. You know, he's going to be an Alvin Harper role. Don't ask him to go be your number one. That's just my opinion of him now. Now, he's early. He's young in his career. He played two full seasons, but I think I've seen enough, actually, after 2 years. I think we know what he is. Because if you're a one-speed runner, you're not going to turn into a two-speed runner at the course of your career. That's a God-given trait. If you don't show it, you don't have it.
Let's move on to the Titans. Jim White of the Tennessean joins us now at @JWyattSports on Twitter. Don't often see a team, Jim, with as many resources for improvement as the Titans, number two overall pick, plus the most cap space in the league. What are you hearing? What positions will these resources address, and what positions are Titans fans kind of clamoring for?
Boy, they do have needs across the board. I mean, all over the defense, they need an edge rusher. I think if I had to list their biggest need heading into the offseason, they've got to have an edge rusher, somebody that will get after the quarterback, you know, put some fears in the offensive coordinators and just kind of create havoc. They haven't had that in a long time, and they need that desperately. They also need help in secondary. They need help, certainly all across the board at linebacker. You know, depending on who you ask, they need help with the quarterback position. You know, it remains to be seen whether they stick with Zach Mettenberger. If they elect to stick with him, which I think they'll ultimately end up doing, they've got to do a better job of protecting him. They need help on the offensive line. They need a new tackle after releasing Michael Orr. They potentially need a new guard. They need they need help at the receiver position. They need help at running back. You name
did,
it.
Did you miss anything, Jim?
Is this why they have the number two right pick?
Did you miss anything, Jim? I think you hit about every position group.
I think that's about it. I mean, this team has all kinds of needs to address. It's a good thing for them is they do have a lot of draft picks, and they've got a lot of money to burn.
So they're not going to get to every one of these needs, at least not at the highest levels. Are you hearing, and teams I know are tight-lipped about this, so it's possible that they haven't made anyone privy to this information, but are you getting a sense for which of these positions are most important to the front office and coaching staff?
Well, edge rusher is no question about it. I mean, it's no secret, you know, that that's what they need, and they certainly are going to have to address it. Now, whether that comes with their first pick, which is second overall, or whether that comes in free agency. I mean, it potentially could come in both areas, man. I think they'll have to get someone in free agency. I think they'll have to get a young guy in the draft because they need, they need someone to get after the passer. So that's going to be priority number one, if you ask me. And then they'll have to be strategic. While they've got a lot of money, I don't expect them necessarily just to go out and start throwing money at free agents. They've done that in the past, and they've made some mistakes, whether it's Andy Levitre or Sean Green or Michael Orr just last year. They've learned their lesson, I think, on throwing some money at free agents. So I think they'll be strategic in identifying guys that fit them. They'll sign a lot of guys and they'll spend a lot of money, but I don't know that you'll see them necessarily spending a boatload on just one or two guys. I think it's going to be across the board to try to, and part of that's because they've got so many.
On defense, how much emphasis do you think they'll place on finding guys who are specifically fit to play in Ray Horton's scheme?
Yeah, I think that will be a big part of it. And I think the voice, you know, the biggest voice on the defensive side this offseason is going to be Dick LeBeau, because while Ray Horton still has the title as defensive coordinator, Dick LeBeau is going to be running the defense. He knows what's been successful with him in the past, and he's had success with Ray Horton in the past. So I think the two of those guys will try to identify players, whether they're former Steelers or just players in the league that fit their scheme or what they want to do. I think that's going to be a big priority for him. And yeah, I'm curious myself. I've had guys tell me. I mean, I talked to him last week, and he thinks that not only some former Steelers will want to follow Dick LeBeau to Nashville, but he thinks some other players around the league will find the Titans attractive because he's now in the building. So I'm curious myself to see whether they've got a little bit of a recruiter there in LeBeau and whether that actually works.
Jim, I'm surprised to hear you say that LeBeau will be running the defense instead of Horton. What makes you say that?
Well, Ken Whitehunt has been on record saying that. And, you know, from the day that he was hired, I talked to Ken Whitehunt the night when the hiring became official. And he said that it's going to be Dick's defense. And he's going to be the one making the decisions. How it works, I guess remains to be seen. I mean, I was around here year before last when Jerry Gray and Greg Williams were both on the defensive staff. You know, Jerry Gray was a defensive coordinator. Greg Williams was, an assistant, head coach. And it was Jerry Gray's defense, although certainly Greg Williams had an input. I think this year coming up, I think those guys will work to put together a plan during the week. But Dick LeBeau is the one who's going to be in charge, and he's going to do as much as he wants to do. I mean, that's how much freedom he's going to have, and that's how much authority that he's been given by Ken Whitehunt.
How's Horton feel about that?
Well, I think I think Ray Horton and Dick LeBeau have a good working relationship, going back to their days in Cincinnati, when Ray Horton first came in the league as a player under Dick LeBeau, those two worked together in Pittsburgh. It's no surprise to Ray Horton that Dick LeBeau was hired, because Ken Whitehunt talked to both of them throughout this process. Dick LeBeau came to Nashville. He met with Ray Horton. You hear Ray Horton has not talked on the record about this hiring since, but you'll hear Ken Whitehunt tell it, and he said that Ray Horton, was pushing for this move. He welcomed Dick LeBeau in with open arms. I think Ray Horton wants to be a part of a winner. I think he wants to have some success. They struggled last year. Just being around Ray Horton for a year and just hearing the things I've heard about Dick LeBeau, these are not guys that have big egos. They're going to be butting heads during the course of the week. I think they'll work well together. And, for the Titans, I mean, Titans hope this is going to be a good match.
Jim, we'll get you out on this. A GM we almost never hear about nationally is Rustin Webster there in Tennessee. Tell us about Webster and what makes him unique, and how do people in the business feel he's done?
Well, he is a football guy, football junkie. He's got a scouting background. He paid his dues in the league as a scout, a long time with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was promoted, several years back to replace Mike Reinfeld. And he's had some misses in free agency and some misses that really have put him under the microscope a little bit, both locally and nationally. He had a great draft last year when they picked Taylor Lewan, and they got Avery Williamson, and they got Mettenberg in the sixth round, and they've got some other players who potentially could turn into, solid contributors for years to come. But he needs a good free agency class. He needs a good draft this year. They had to, obviously, he was dealing this time last year with a brand new coaching staff and trying to identify players to fit completely different schemes than what he'd been used to, a 3-4 defense and a new defense under Ken Whitson. I think with a year with those guys this offseason, he kind of knows more what he's looking for. He knows he's on the spot. He said it himself. He needs a good offseason to try to help jumpstart this team and try to get things going back in the right direction. But he definitely puts the work in. He has a good reputation for being a good football mind, but he'll tell you himself he needs to do a better job of finding the right guys, especially in free agency.
Jim Wyatt, the Tennessean. Thanks, Jim, for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I can't believe I didn't hear that news about LeBeau having controlled the defense like that. I don't know how that's – because he has that title, assistant head coach or whatever, but there are certain teams that doesn't mean anything.
Associate head coach.
Associate head coach. Is that what it is, really?
Yeah, associate head coach in charge of the defense.
I heard that he was never going to Arizona either. Like, nothing fell through there. It was just never in the plans, which would imply that Arizona did indeed want an older coach to oversee. And Tennessee came and said, hey, you want to actually still be a coordinator, essentially a coordinator.
Instead of just having a say in things.
Yeah. And there's a big difference now between Horton and LeBeau because they run different types of schemes. Now, Horton can easily transition to LeBeau's because Horton did that for years in Pittsburgh under LeBeau, and it worked real well. But this changes things because if it were Horton, then my opinion would have been that the Titans need cornerbacks to run that scheme, press man scheme. But instead, if it's LeBeau, then you do need edge rushers. You don't need corners because you're going to be playing off-man zone coverage. That's why Pittsburgh drafted guys in the third round to fifth round at corner every year, and they would try to find outside edge rushers. That would be the premium position.
I did read that some people are suggesting a James Harrison. Get the gang back together.
That's not going to be. You're still going to need to draft one.
Yeah, sure.
Or two.
He's not your answer. I think
right.
We all know that.
Yeah, he is your answer if you didn't answer it earlier. He's your last answer.
Last resort.
Yeah. So that changes things. Jim went through the list of needs. It would be silly of us to go through all their needs because he didn't list one on there that I disagreed with. I think they do need help. I'm getting over the shock though that it's LeBeau running this defense instead of Ray Horton.
So how'd you think it shook out?
I thought it was going to be Horton running because here's why I'm shocked.
And Dick LeBeau be an advisor?
Yes. Like, yeah. Dick LeBeau's 77 years old. I mean, that's old. That's old.
Yeah.
And
if he wanted to be an advisor though, it seems like he would have taken the
Arizona job under Arians.
Yeah, with Bruce Arians.
Perhaps, but keep in mind, he knows Wisenhunt too, doesn't he? Because Wisenhunt just like was the predecessor of Arians as the offensive coordinator
there. Connection
and
there.
LeBeau was there when Wisenhunt was there. He's been there in Pittsburgh a while. So he knows Wisenhunt in Tennessee just as much, and he gets to work with Horton versus Betcher, the new D coordinator in Arizona, who I don't think he does know. But what was I saying? He's 77 years old. Horton is he was a head coaching candidate a few years ago. Now, he didn't get a whole lot of looks, but he's been an outstanding defensive coordinator for most of the last 5 years now. And it didn't work out last year so much, but he didn't have the resources. So I'm real surprised that he would go, and I doubt he went to the coaching staff or went to Wisenhunt and suggested this. I'm surprised, though, that they make this change because, to me, Ray Horton's good enough to be doing the job by himself.
Yeah, hopefully he's not insecure about this one.
And if he's on board with this fully, and he probably is, but if he was on board even before it happened, like he liked the idea because it helped the team, all the credit in the world to him. That's great self-security, and that is really rare in the coaching profession. If he didn't want this to happen, I wouldn't blame him either, though, because I think he's good enough, as I said, I think he's good enough to do the job by himself.
That's rare in all sports, not even just
that's
coaching,
rare in
but
all
like media.
Business,
yeah,
probably, huh?
Especially
yeah.
Media.
Yeah.
A lot of parallels there I never think about.
A little nervous, John?
No guaranteed money.
Yeah.
All right, well, speaking of guaranteed money, the most cap space this offseason, the Jacksonville Jaguars have some options to build around Blake Bortles heading into his second season. What was your overall impression of that
Bortles,
rookie?
I thought it was good. Does Jacksonville or Tennessee have the most? Because we've said it both ways. Both of us have.
Yeah.
They're up there. They're both way up
there.
Yeah,
over the cap has the Jags as one, Tennessee two, but
okay.
I mean,
it's semantics. But
yeah.
I'm just hedging into the Twitter trolls that are
both have a lot of money.
Call us on that.
Both a lot of money.
I like Bortles. I don't know how well he fits what they're doing necessarily. They have a new offensive – well, because they have a new offensive coordinator in Greg Olsen. And, all right, let me back that up. Bortles fits what they're doing because they're going to do what Bortles does well. But with Greg Olsen, Greg Olsen, keep in mind, just had Derek Carr in Oakland. Now he's got a very different type of quarterback in Bortles, a guy with a much slower release. Bortles still very good. You got to – what is
– No, I can just feel Vikings fan getting ready to tweet you right now. What about Teddy Bridgewater? You can't say Derek Carr anymore without Teddy Bridgewater.
Well, we're not – okay, Vikings
that's
fan.
That's just
we're
why
not, we're not talking about the – we're talking about the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville.
Sorry, I tried to smirk to myself.
Who was from Oakland, so that's why I brought up Derek Carr. And now he's here, and you can bet that Olsen's work with Derek Carr last year had something to do with him getting the job in Jacksonville. But Olsen has a very different type of quarterback he's working with here, so there's going to be an adjustment. And who adjusts to who? Does Olsen adjust to Bortles, which I think is probably the way it needs to go, or does Bortles have to adjust to Olsen? But you've got a guy in Bortles who can run around. He's very physical. He hates the Roethlisberger comparisons. I would back off on the comparisons because he's not as pristine of a passer yet. So they're going to have to find some ways to make it work. I think a guy like that, a big body guy, you want to have a drop back passing game, especially if he has a slower release. You don't necessarily ask him to spread out and get rid of the ball on three steps because the slow release kind of negates the whole point of the quick timing of three steps. So a drop back passing game. Now, here's the problem, John. They did not draft drop back passing game wide receivers last year. They brought in a bunch of guys, Robinson, Marquise Lee, but those are more spread game type receivers. So you have a situation where the...
So can they not do both? Is that...
Well, I mean, yeah, they can all do both. These are professional players,
that's
but it's
saying.
A matter of what you do best. And so you have a situation where the best skill of the quarterback does not align with the best skills of the wide receivers. And when we're talking about building Jacksonville, what you do around that, you've got to decide which way are we going with this thing. I think you build around Bortles. Therefore, you got to find a big body receiver for him and get him a tight end, someone to replace Mercedes Lewis, who's going to be done after
terrible contract.
Yeah, well, it happens. I mean, he looked. There was a time where Mercedes Lewis looked like the next big thing. I mean, he did.
Jags thought so.
He could block and he could catch passes away from his body down the seams. Now, we didn't know that he reached his peak in like his third or fourth season, though.
Yeah.
We didn't know. There's no way to know that.
Depending on what happens with Justin Blackmon, could be a nice group coming back here, some young pieces for Blake Bortles. I'd almost point to the running game, though, being more important to improve. Given what they have at wide receiver, that running game was non-existent outside some flashes from Denard Robinson. Toby Gerhart is...
He's a backup.
He's a backup.
Certainly. And they tried to make him a starter, and
he'll probably be gone.
Idea.
$3 million in savings if they cut him.
Yeah, except the guy that signed him last year, I don't think they will because Dave Caldwell was a newer GM and he signed him and made him – he decided, okay, we're going to pay Gerhart this much. If you cut him after just 1 year, you're basically saying I made a big mistake. And while Gerhart's a backup, they do like him, and I don't think they feel like he's a big mistake. Now, at least deep down, they might because I think they'll find another running back to compete with Gerhart, and then it is a big mistake because you're paying your backup running back $3 million, I guess. But – I don't think they'll cut him.
Paul Posluszny struggled with injuries. There it goes. Finally get it out last season.
Well, the Posluszny did that too.
Posluszny, tripped me up. $7.5 million cap hit. Do you still ride him out, given what you've seen before the injury?
Well, he was their best player before the injury. He was a very good linebacker. He's 30. He'll be 31 in October. He's had injuries before early in his career when he was with Buffalo.
A lot of money.
I think I keep him. You know, they have some speed at linebacker there and some of these younger guys, Telvin Smith, even John Lutalele, who I don't think you put in the starting lineup, but I remember he played in like week 16 or 17, something like that, and he played pretty well. And do they re-sign JT Thomas at linebacker? I guess Geno Hayes as well, but I think Thomas is the better player there. I don't know on Posluszny. I have no idea. It could be a function of what you feel you have around them.
And you got a ton of money to play with, too. Let's not act like you have to.
Yeah, I just thought of that. I agree. I think you keep them for that reason.
Probably any other scenario besides these top five in cap space. You probably have to get rid of them.
Yeah, I would agree.
Jags, third pick, right behind the Titans, who we just talked about. What need needs to be addressed?
Like, what's their most important need?
Yeah, what's the most important need?
I would go I'd find a pass rusher. And, you know, if you can get – I mean, if Leonard Williams gets by you down there. Yeah, I knew it.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's, who told you about him?
My editor, and they said that I might have to go watch film and interview him in a few weeks.
And you didn't. Oh, you might.
No, I might have to. Yeah, we're close to work. Maybe I'm not supposed to say that.
So
but they're not listening this late in the show, right?
Oh, especially if you're still with us, this is our longest show to date. So.
Gary Grambling's the editor running it, and he's very diligent. He might. So if he does listen, in fact, he's the one that has to embed the podcast into the website.
Can your first statement to Leonard Williams be, "Hey Leonard, just came across your name a couple weeks ago. Real impressed by what I see out of USC."
Yeah. No, you know what? Honestly, John, will be the first statement. It will, because I'm not going to sit there and pretend like I've known Leonard Williams all this time. He's a college kid that apparently is really good at playing football. So I'm going to go watch football with him. I saw him at the combine, so I know what he looks like. Everyone's told me he's a freak. So, yeah, it'll be fine. But if you can get him in Jacksonville, that'd be a pass rusher. Is he – all right, let's see. This is where it backfires on me. Is he an edge rusher or is he more inside?
He's more inside.
Yeah. But he's still a pass rushing type, right?
Yeah, he can do both.
Yeah, and I promise you folks who will remember this when I write the article, if I write it, I'll watch him before I go interview him. I just haven't done it yet.
Do you have another story coming out with Staples or?
Yeah, yeah.
You got more of those?
Well, yeah, the AFC South coming out. That's why we're doing this, John.
Yeah, it's going to be
inside. That's quite inside this article.
Yeah. Well,
you're
hour and 25
your
minutes. And
you
don't send me emails like that. I just know that we're going division by division.
To answer your question, now you're going to say goodbye. Get someone on the defensive line. There's pass rushers to be had in this draft.
Good way to end it. Thanks for sticking around. Hour and a half. We're impressed if you're still with us. If you're not,
you
missed out.
Very grateful. But there are no commercials.
That's right. Not yet. Just kidding. All right. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Just search MMQB Podcast with Andy Benoit. Hit subscribe. It'll make it easier on you. Maybe not easy on me, though. Stitcher. We're on Stitcher. In case you don't have iTunes, Android users, you can listen to us on the go. I'm John with Andy at Andy_Benoit at Ingles Angle. We'll get you next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.